We have an autocracy which runs this university. It's managed. We were told the following. If President Kerr actually tried to get something more liberal out of the regents in his telephone conversation, why didn't he make some public statement to that effect? And the answer we received from a well-meaning liberal was the following. He said, would you ever imagine the manager of a firm making a statement publicly in opposition to his board of directors? That's the answer. Well, I ask you to consider, if this is a firm, and if the board of regents are the board of directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, then I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw material. But we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. We're human beings.
Wednesday, December 2nd, 1964. That was Mario Savio, student and leader of the free speech movement at the University of California at Berkeley. His words preceded a sit-in and strike led by students against the administration of the university, the climax of nearly 3 months of negotiations, protests, and demonstrations. In mid-September, the Dean of Students informed student political organizations that they would no longer be allowed to use the campus to solicit funds or to advocate off-campus political activity. The ban covered organizations ranging from civil rights groups to Students for Goldwater, Young Democrats, Young Republicans, and the Young Socialist Alliance. Most of these groups, about 20 in all, coalesced into a coordinating organization, the Free Speech Movement, or FSM. For 2 weeks, the students negotiated with university officials in an attempt to have the regulation rescinded. Then, on September 30th, some students set out to violate the regulation. Their actions culminated in the demonstrations of October 1st and 2nd, during which students surrounded a police car for more than 30 hours and refused to allow police to remove from the campus and book a former student who had joined in violating regulations. At the end of the demonstrations, student representatives and University President Clark Kerr reached agreement that
the student demonstrators shall desist from all forms of their illegal protest against university regulations. Number two, a committee representing students, including leaders of the demonstration, faculty and administration will immediately be set up to conduct discussions and hearing into all aspects of political behavior on campus and its control, and to make recommendations to the administration. Three, the arrested man will be booked but released on his own recognizance, and the university, which is the complainant, will not press charges. This is for the duration of the suspension of the suspended students will be submitted within 1 week to the Student Conduct Committee of the Academic Senate, not to the administration. Five, activity may be continued by student organizations in accordance with existing university regulations.
The agreement solved nothing. The day after it was signed, the university announced that there was no such committee as the Committee on Student Conduct of the Academic Senate, and that the cases of the suspended students would be submitted to a committee appointed by the chancellor, the chief administrative officer on the Berkeley. Negotiations began again. Hunts adopted a policy statement, sleep banned activities would be empowered to take disciplinary action against students who had off-campus activity. The students responded that allowing disciplinary action for advocacy of unlawful activity placed them in double jeopardy, and that the effect of the policy statement was to rule in advance that certain kinds of advocacy were illegal, thus violating the First and 14th Amendments to the United States Constitution. Demonstrations continued. On November 27th, Chancellor Edward Strong sent four students letters which became the catalysts of the demonstrations which ended December 3rd. The Chancellor informed the four students that they would be required to attend hearings before the Committee on Student Conduct on charges of illegal activity during the demonstrations of October 1st and 2nd. On December 1st, the free speech movement announced that a round-the-clock sit-in would be held in Sproul Hall, the administration building of the Berkeley campus, if the university did not meet three demands by noon December 2nd. The demands were that charges against the four students be dropped, that the university guarantee to take no further action against students, and that university regulations be revised so that only the courts would regulate the content of political expression, that the faculty, students, and administration would jointly regulate the form of political expression, and that university regulations which unnecessarily restrict political activity would be repealed. The demands were not met. At noon on Wednesday, December 2nd, 4,000 to 5,000 persons attended a rally on the steps of Sproul Hall. The main speaker was Mario Savio.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Following Savio's speech, Joan Baez spoke, sang, and led a crowd of 1,100 into the building to begin the sit-in.
The only thing that occurs to me, seeing all of you people there, I don't know how many of you intend to come inside with us, but that is that you muster up as much love as you possibly can, and as little hatred, and as little violence, and as little angries as you can, although I know it's been exasperating. The more love you can feel, the more chance there is for it to be a success.
Inside, the students discussed what might happen to them.
But I'm going to give instructions for all the contingencies. Nobody should be standing if the police come to eject us. When the police touch you, we request you to do two things. To ask if you're under arrest and to go limp. And it's very easy to go limp. You just sort of...
You know,
it's very easy to go limp. It's the easiest thing to do at that time. Now, if you are under arrest, it's going to be very easy. They're going to pick you up and carry you in a paddy wagon. No more instructions are necessary. In terms of what goes on down there, going down there, you give me your name and your address, and that's all. But more likely, they'll eject you. When you're carried out of the building and you're sat down, we're asking you not to get up then and trot off home. We're asking you to sit where you're left, or if anything, sit near to the door. So I repeat, we don't want any linking arms. We don't want any fighting with the cops. We don't want anybody hurt or any violent incidents.
At 7 p.m., the doors were closed, and police announced that anyone who remained in the building did so in violation of the law. But the police made no attempt to remove the students. The students showed films. A Hanukkah service was held, ending with a Hatikva.
May our hearts say,
lecture on James Joyce to instruction on civil disobedience.
All right, in other words, remember that it is possible that there could be unintentional harm.
About midnight, most students prepared to go to sleep. At about the same time, Governor Edmund Brown announced, "I have tonight called upon the law enforcement officials in Alameda County to arrest and take into custody all students and others who may be in violation of the law at Sproul Hall. I have directed the California Highway Patrol to lend all necessary assistance. These orders are to be carried out peacefully as a demonstration that the rule of law must be honored in California." The university had not yet issued any statement on the sit-in, but about 1 a.m., the students were awakened with the news that Chancellor Strong was coming with an official statement. He arrived about 3 a.m.
May I have your attention, please? I am Dr. Edward Strong, Chancellor of the Berkeley campus. I have an announcement. This assemblage has developed to such a point that the purpose and work of the university have been materially impaired. It is clear that there have been acts of disobedience and illegality which cannot be tolerated in a responsible educational center and would not be tolerated anywhere in our society. The university has shown great restraint and patience in exercising its legitimate authority in order to allow every opportunity for expressing differing points of view. The university always stands ready to engage in the established and accepted procedures for resolving differences of opinion. I request that each of you cease your participation in this unlawful assembly. I urge you, both individually and collectively, to leave this area. I request that you immediately disperse. Failure to disperse will result in disciplinary action by the university. Please go.
Your attention, please. This is Lieutenant M.F. Chandler of the University of California Police Department. A condition of unlawful assemblage now exists under authority of Section 726 of the Penal Code of the State of California, and in the name of the people of the State of California, I command you to disperse. I further notify you that all persons who do not immediately disperse are in violation of the California state law and are subject to arrest. You have 5 minutes to leave the building or you will be arrested.
Although the group inside had dwindled by then to about 800, few if any students left the building under the 5 minute time limit. In the next half hour, police reinforcements arrived, and about 3:45, the arrests began.
The elevator is stopped here up on the fourth floor. They're using a Polaroid camera, and the police are taking pictures of each of them. Seems that they're not taking chances about misidentification. Looking down the corridor now, I see another demonstrator being picked up off the floor. He also has gone limp. The policemen are trying to lift him up. He slips out from under their arms. They're twisting. One arm is back in a hammerlock. The other arm is bent underneath him. And there, a third policeman has lifted his legs up, and he's been carried face down into the elevator and has been placed on the ground. He's lying on his stomach. I think they're turning him over now. It's hard to see over the crush of people. They're using numbers printed on slips of paper. And the number they're holding up against his chest as they take his photograph is number 7. Another demonstrator is being moved along. This one hasn't gone completely limp, but he's got his coat twisted around him, I guess by his own desire. He seems now in the elevator to have gone limp. Again, there's this struggle to get him set for a picture. He seems to have gone very limp, and he's a fairly tall fellow. so that they're having a hard time. They seem to have got him set now, and there goes the flashbulb. That, according to the count, if that number was accurate, was number 8. Here comes another demonstrator. This one's a young lady. She's gone limp, more or less, but is walking along with them. No, they've carried her. She was lifted off the ground and carried into the elevator. There is a policewoman, Berkeley policewoman, who's also entered the elevator with her. I see they have the policewoman along in case any of the young lady demonstrators run into any trouble. They're holding a number 9 up. Picture has been taken again. And a short description or statement. Perhaps they're taking some kind of statement or requesting information is being taken. The elevator is now about to descend. The policewoman has left it.
By 7:15, the fourth floor was cleared, but only about 70 students had been arrested. At this point, the pace was accelerated. The highway patrolmen and deputy sheriffs were pressed into service, and the students who had until then been transported to the basement in the elevator were now taken forcibly down the stairs. At about the same time, the police attempted to arrest the leaders of the demonstration. One group of about a dozen policemen made a surprise rush up the main stairs to the second floor, arrested one leader, and took away the microphone of the public address system with which the students had been addressing people outside the building. But there were other leaders and an extra microphone. After that, the students packed in tightly around the window leading to a balcony where the remaining leaders stood to use the PA system. About 8 a.m., police made another rush, this time in greater force.
An entire contingent of sheriff's department people from Alameda County and California Highway Patrol have moved into the lobby area of the second floor. Some 30 patrolmen and the students continue to sit in on the floor. California patrolmen are moving in, led by an inspector in plain clothes, over the students, over the heads of the students who are seated down. They're moving very swiftly, pushing their way up over the seated demonstrators, stepping on them and kicking them. These are men of the California Highway Patrol and Alameda County.
They're pushing on up. They're stepping over people. Hey, hold it. Those
pushing their way up.
Watch it. Those kids, there are just kids sitting there. My God.
One of the California Highway Patrol.
Hey, easy, does it? Wow. They can make their way through. Jesus.
They've grabbed one kid and pushed him down the steps, beating him on the back of the head.
It's a kind of gauntlet. They're kicking them and throwing them down the stairs. They're throwing them down the stairs and pushing them down the stairs out of the way. I don't know what's happening to these kids, but it looks horrible. They're tugging them by their feet and throwing them down the stairs, literally tossing them down the steps between them. There's a double line of cops directly in front of me. And they're tossing them down the stairs. One of the police officials has just come over and shaken his head, said, go on. They've cleared a spot. The cops in front of me are laughing. They've thrown boys and girls down the stairs, their heads jostling and banging against the banisters and marble stairs. One fellow was just going down slowly and was grabbed and pushed by one particular policeman here, directly in front of me. There's a cop here who's speaking to one of the kids sitting in the corner, directly to my left, who's refused to move. One kid is
now being pulled feet first down the stairs. Some other cops are grabbing him. We'll report this at the press. All right, okay, okay, all right, okay. Well, we're moving. Fine, okay. All right, fine. They can walk. The police have ordered us to get out of the way until they've gotten this cleaned up. Down. We've just about been tossed down the stairs. They're pulling the kids down by their legs, bouncing them down the stairs. None of the kids that I've seen have fought back in any way whatsoever. The cops are turning around and going back. One of them has just kicked a shoe that was lying on the stair into the bunch of kids sitting down on the floor.
Later, reporters spoke to some of the students who had been thrown down the stairs.
I'm a student here, yes. I'm a junior. Nothing happened to me. The cop just grabbed me and pulled me down the stairs, and somebody else pulled me, grabbed my arm, and then I went limp, and then another grabbed my leg, and they jerked me, and then they, shoved me down the stairs, and another said, can you walk? And I didn't answer. He said, well, all right then, and he grabbed me and shoved me down further. And a couple others grabbed me by the legs and shoved me down. But I did see, one cop hit a girl with his fist as hard as he could on the forehead.
Was there any provocation for that?
No, she was just sitting there.
Did you give any provocation?
No.
Yes, I'm a student here. I was sitting right by the banister at the top of the stairs, and as the policemen were going in, along the other side of the stairs, they were storming in there, and there was a lot of things happening behind me that I didn't even know. One sheriff's deputy was standing right in front of me, and he asked me, he started to step through, and I was sitting there, and he said, will you move? And I said, I'm sitting here. And he did strike me in the face with his open hand. It left no injury.
I'm a sophomore in the College of Letters and Science. A policeman had stepped on my thigh. I demanded that he look down and see what he was doing. He did and responded by jumping up and down on it. I could not find any numbers on any of the policemen. They apparently were not wearing them or were hiding them inside their coats.
Larry, did you offer any provocation?
No, I did not.
Ray, did you see any badge numbers or badges or numbers on helmets?
None at all, and I went up to look at one of the helmets. There is no number on it.
From then on, newsmen were generally excluded from the third floor, where arrests continued, and the back stairs down which the arrested students were dragged. The police taped newspapers over the glass windows on doors to the stairwells.
At the moment, one of the university policemen is putting up some newspaper to cover over the panes in the windows. There's another student being dragged down by two highway patrolmen with white helmets. I can't see any reason why those windows should be closed, except the students are being bounced down the stairs.
Yeah, well, the point here is that I, as you probably have already heard, we were blocked from any view of something that we were watching for a long time. I was standing very close to the window watching the kids, most of whom, at least half of whom, were being bounced down the stairs, some of them in extreme fashion. You can hear it right now. They're literally dragging him down. You can hear the bumping. And at this point, one of the policemen suddenly said, you, pointing to me, you stand away, get 15 feet away. And then I started to walk away, and he says, now go on away, get out of the line here. So I was out of the line of vision. And then one of the ABC newsman, the American Broadcasting Company man, came over and said, look, we are supposed to be allowed to be at the point of production where the arrest is taking place. He said, that's what we do in San Francisco. And some large lieutenant said, well, that's not the way we do it over here, buddy.
You helped cover up the windows, didn't you? Is there any reason for covering up the windows? Well, I thought I saw you help cover up the windows. I see. Okay, Sergeant, thank you. Sergeant in the University Police Force, who said, I thought I saw him covering up the windows. There goes someone right now who's being dragged down by both arms stretched out. We can only see them at one turn in the stairway. It seems that the police haven't been able to find enough newspaper to cover up the top of the windows, and we can see just the top of a turn on the stairway. So you see about 6 feet of people being pulled down by their arms or collars with their spines bouncing on the stairs as they go.
Later, University President Clark Kerr issued a statement in which he said in part,
University, which has always stood for democratic principles, including observance of the law, expects faculty, staff, and students to carry on the orderly processes of the university and to reject what has become an FSM attempt at anarchy. The FSM issued an ultimatum which had nothing to do with free speech, and which it knew and publicly stated the university could not possibly accept. This ultimatum called for the abdication by the university of its responsibilities. The ultimatum was not accepted. The FSM then again seized Sproul Hall, as it had done before, and stated it planned to bring the university to a grinding halt. The FSM and its leaders from the start declared the police would have to haul them out. They are now finding that, in their effort to escape the discipline of the university, they have thrown themselves into the arms of the community at large. They have asked that they be subject only to external law and external courts. They are learning that the community is no more sympathetic with anarchy than the university they so violently condemn.
It was after 6 p.m., more than 14 hours after arrest began, before the 635 policemen finished clearing Sproul Hall. The district attorney announced that 780 persons had been arrested, and according to university records, about 80% were students, faculty, or other employees. They were booked on as many as three charges: illegal assembly, failure to disperse, and resisting arrest, a charge which includes going limp when arrested. Bail for those booked on all three charges was set at $110.